Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 51. The crew today, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Chris Bond, he's taking the week off. There's more than one big story every week in the ACC. We'll go around the nation, take a look at as many as we can on the podcast. Otherwise, we invite you to visit the website for coverage, accnation.net. Remember the net. Let's get right into ACC basketball. And Will, it's all yours, my man.
All right, we'll go back to last Sunday where Georgia Tech beat Syracuse 71-65. It was a pretty competitive ball game, actually. Georgia Tech actually came out, played pretty well in the second half, scored 41 points, and pretty much led them to the win. On Monday night, Miami beat Virginia 54-48 in overtime. And anybody who might have watched that game probably felt pretty bad for the Rims, as many missed shots as there were.
That was painful, man.
Those things probably needed some ibuprofen after the game. Yeah. That was a brutal game to watch. Indeed. It was kind of frustrating watching it from the Virginia standpoint because they had every opportunity to win it, and they had a couple one-on-ones late and just kept missing them, and then let Miami get back into it and ultimately sent it to overtime and got the win. On Tuesday, Virginia Tech with another impressive win, beating Clemson 71-70. They're playing some really good basketball, even with the loss of Chris Clark for the season. They're shooting the ball very well. Wednesday night, Wake held off Pitt 63-59 to continue with their bubble hopes. Syracuse upset Duke 78-75 on a buzzer beater three by John Gillen, which was I was watching that game, just was really surprised at how kind of slow they took it, did Syracuse up the court in the final seconds, as if they didn't realize that there was only like 4 seconds left, and Gillen hurried up the court and then launched that three, and it banked in. It's a beautiful play and an impressive win for Syracuse, who may very well get into the tournament with a win like that. Elsewhere that night, UNC beat Louisville 74-63. I'm not terribly surprised by that result. The bigs in that game just played very well, and then they shot the three pretty well as well. Went to Saturday, Florida State got everything they wanted from Clemson, but got a very impressive road win, 76-74. And Miami held off Duke, another road win, or another home win, a road loss for the Blue Devils this week. It was 55-50, and another game where Miami didn't shoot the ball the greatest, but they did just enough defensively to get the win.
So let's talk about some of these teams. And Syracuse is the Giants' layer in the ACC, apparently, but that may go game to game because we started out Sunday, as you mentioned, Georgia Tech with that big win there. And Georgia Tech has been silently slipping right up into the standings of the ACC, which we'll get into here in a little while. Syracuse, what's going on with this team? They're the poster child of the up and down of the ACC.
Yeah, it's weird. I think a lot of it too is they had just lost three in a row before beating Duke, but those were two losses on the road, which you could kind of understand. Then they lost at home in overtime to Louisville. Also, you can understand that. I think a lot of it is just because they play, they have a really nice home court advantage there at the Carrier Dome. You can jam so many people into that arena, and it just gives off a really good vibe. And in some of these losses I just mentioned, obviously they're playing teams that are sort of on their level, not so much Pitt, but you're still losing on the road, which you can understand because it is hard to win on the road in college basketball. And they won at NC State a couple weeks ago, but NC State, they're not a great team. Even with that, I still think they're 9-7. Yeah, in conference play, as my dog has joined the podcast. Hello, Martin.
Hey, Martin.
But I think even with the up and down inconsistent play, I still think they're going to get into a tournament because of wins like Duke and Virginia and Florida State that they've gathered up so far in conference play.
Yeah, wait till we hit the bracketology part of the program, Will. You may be surprised. So let's go to this next game. And we were talking about how nothing was going in. Miami over UVA. It was just maddening. I'm sitting there looking at people doing layups that were just going over. They weren't even I mean, it was insane. I've never seen a basketball game like that. And this was on the part of both teams. It wasn't like one team was missing it, but it was like everybody's missing their shots. And I'm going, somebody stop this game and go back to basketball 101. What happened?
Well, we were talking about a missed shot. I mean, Miami shot 36% from the field. Virginia shot 31%. And specifically looking at London Perantes, who has just really tailed off of the last four or five games, he was 2 of 15 himself. And I think part of that is just he's probably just fatigued because he's played so many minutes of late. He's, you know, regularly putting up 30 minutes a game, if not more. And he played all 40 in the or 40 minutes, not all 40 minutes, but he played 40 of the 45 in the Miami game. And it just, he hasn't been able to have much of a break because I guess you could say they don't necessarily trust what's behind him just yet, or either that, or they like him in specific matchups with a Ty Jerome or Darius Thompson. But he's just been struggling so much, you know, from the field. And it's obviously been a huge detriment to Virginia because they're, other than Devin Hall, they haven't had a lot of consistent shot making.
Some of their freshmen were doing okay a couple of games ago, but they've mm-hmm. sort of been that up and down, and we would expect that with freshmen. I mean, it makes mm-hmm. sense, right? I mean, and as we mentioned in a podcast or two ago, we're talking about how these freshmen are really going to make a big difference for Virginia next year and the year after. I'm really looking forward to that because a little seasoning this year, they were forced into this situation. It's going to make a big difference for the Cavaliers mm-hmm. Next season. So this may not be the season for fans to, you know, anticipate too much. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, a lot of people didn't want to accept the fact that this was kind of a rebuilding year, even with, you know, still having Perantes on the roster. But mm-hmm. and obviously with them losing so much, you know, after last season, and then losing Austin Nichols, you know, after the second game of the season, which was his first. And, you know, he lost such a huge presence on the inside of both scoring, rebounding, and shot blocking. And they just didn't have anybody else to really replace him with. And it's really affected their inside scoring, especially as they've gotten deeper in the conference play.
That may actually turn out to be a godsend that they lost Nichols, based upon the fact that these kids are getting their playing time early and getting that experience. They're going to come in with a vengeance next season, so that's going to be fun.
Especially
to watch.
With, you mentioned the freshman, Mamadi Diakite is the one that I think could be a real force in the next year or so.
I would agree with that. Well, next, Virginia Tech, as you mentioned, with that, you know, Chris Clark being out of the game, sometimes when you lose a key player, the folks who are behind them on the bench step up. And that's what's happening with Virginia Tech. They've got some players who are just saying, hey, this is my opportunity, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to play it. And these guys have not had, you know, the overall minutes throughout the season, so they're fresh legs. And Virginia Tech is really playing some good ball right now. But Clemson wasn't going to let that one go into the night silently.
No, it was a pretty good game all in all, with Virginia Tech coming out ahead by one thanks to a Seth Allen three in the final seconds. And Clemson was actually leading for a good chunk of the second half, but obviously when you get down, we know their inability to close out games, and that was just another case of them not defending Allen really well at all. And He hit a second three of the game, the one that ultimately won the game. And, you know, they had really a strong three-point shooting in that game. The Hokies are 12 of 22 in that game, and that's really how they're going to have to win their games with no Clark. They're going to have to launch a bunch of threes. And, they, like I said, they hit 12 against Clemson, and that had a lot to do with the win.
So the Wake over Pitt game, close four-point game, I would say that was probably one of those games, and I know that you're probably going to agree with me here. Wake is Wake. Pitt is Pitt. And you put the two together, that's an even match. And that's pretty much what that game proved. So we're just going to skip over that. We'll go to we're not even going to talk about this Syracuse and Duke upset because this is, again, Syracuse. What can I say? But the North Carolina over Louisville game, I think, proves your point from last week where you said UNC, that's the team. That's mm-hmm. the ACC leader. And I, you know, you have hit that one right on the head, Will. North Carolina has gotten to this point in the season now. They are playing all out. This is their conference, and it's their conference to lose at this point.
Definitely. I think a lot of that has to do with Justin Jackson emerging so much lately. He had 21 points in that game, shot 7 of 16 from the field, which isn't, you know, great, but it was pretty, but it's still pretty good. Hit 4 threes as well. He's like, he along with Joel Berry and you know, Theo Pinson all played really well, and Kennedy Meeks as well, all had double digit points for the Tar Heels in that game. Meeks actually had 10 rebounds. But the way you beat UNC is, you know, you have to have the guys inside to beat them. And while I like some of the bigs that Louisville has, they just aren't too nearly on the level as UNC. I mean, the Tar Heels out rebounded North Carolina 46-33 in that game. And when UNC gets that kind of rebounding margin, you're gonna lose. Let's just be real.
Yeah. And Louisville is not an easy team to win over. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm. They're deep, they're fast, they're effective, they're good at rebounding. Mm-hmm. But if you're better, that's the difference, and this is very clearly North Carolina, definitely looking great now. Mm-hmm. I would be amazed if they did not pull off the tournament win, and really go deep. I'm still not 100% confidence about where they're headed in the NCAA tournament, but that's for a whole different discussion and time. I'm they're going to have to prove a little bit to me. Mm-hmm. Before I feel confident there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you certainly can't rule them out as a one seed right now.
Yeah.
I think they have a very good chance, actually.
Indeed. Well, Florida State, just getting by Clemson. I don't understand this team. I really don't. They came on like a flamethrower at the beginning of the season, and now they're just running out of fuel.
They're a team. They're a whole different team on the road, and at home, they're one of the best teams in the country. On the road, they're just very mediocre for whatever the reason. I mean, this is actually their second win outside in conference play outside of the state of Florida.
Crazy.
And yeah, this is a team that they obviously have the potential to make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, but at the same time, but the way they play on road neutral, they could easily get beat in the second round, maybe, or depending on the matchup, maybe the first round. You gotta like their size up front with Jonathan Isaac, you know, 14 points in the win, and Dwayne Bacon, he had 12 points, but he shot 3 of 14 from the field, and I feel like a lot of the success of that team is predicated on how well he does. Even though he was 3 of 14, he was 1 of 6 from three as well. Didn't shoot the ball very well, but they luckily had some other guys step up. I mentioned Isaac was 5 of 8 shooting. Even Xavier Raton Mays, he was 5 of 12 from the field. That's not great, but it's pretty good. But he had 7 assists as well, which is a pretty good stat for him. He's not a high assist guy, but he did very well against yesterday. He had a 7-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. That's a very strong performance by Raton Mays.
So whatever is going on in the head of the Seminoles, they need to get that nonsense out of there as soon as possible, because they're going to be hitting the road. And as you mentioned, they're not going to go very deep in the NCAA tournament if they keep playing like that. If they have an issue playing on the road, they're going to be done very quickly. And that would be a shame, because this is a good team. It's a team with depth, experience, talent, and the ability to go fairly far into the tournament. Let's see if they can have a little couch time with somebody, maybe their coach, that can clear their heads out. And Miami, let's talk about Miami, because they had a nice win over Duke on Saturday. And, well, hey, the Canes, they're kind of coming up from, well, nowhere, so to speak, and not doing too bad.
They're the one team I've had the hardest time gauging this year, because I really didn't know what to expect from them. But getting the contributions they've had from Bruce Brown, the freshman, especially in this Duke game where he went for 25 on 11 of 18 shooting, he's going to take them very far. they got their 20th win of the season. That's about the quietest 20-win team in college basketball right there.
Yeah.
If they're very unassuming of it, but they obviously play very well. This was a huge win really for the resume booster, including that Virginia win. They're definitely in the tournament after these wins this week. I think they've at least locked up no worse than an 8 or 9 seed in the tournament. They could move up depending on how this upcoming week goes, plus how they fare in the ACC tournament. They could be a team that could actually surprise some people. All right, let's take a look at the latest KenPom ratings. They're through Saturday, February 25th, and we'll obviously update them this week at accnation.net. UNC sitting in at number 3, which is pretty good. Louisville at 7, Virginia at 9. Duke has dropped to 15. Florida State is at 18. Notre Dame's in at 25. Miami with 2 nice wins this week has catapulted up to 29. Wake Forest at 33. Clemson at 34, Virginia Tech's at 43, and Syracuse is at 50.
Well, I don't have any issues with North Carolina being at number 3. I think they're very much proven that they're worthy of that slot. But as we start going down the scale here a little bit, I start having some questions. But, again, this is a statistical analysis, and stats don't lie. But stats only lie when you apply them the way you want to apply them.
Exactly.
But I don't think that's the case with Ken. Ken does a great job of putting things together, and it gives you a fairly accurate reflection of what's going on with the team. So, what are your thoughts? What's the first team on that list that you think shouldn't be where they are?
I look at the towards the back. I feel like Virginia Tech should be a little higher than 43rd, and just because they're a 20-win team with some pretty impressive wins. Like they had the double overtime win over Virginia. They've had a couple. They've swept Clemson, beat Syracuse, beat Duke pretty handily. But it's just that they have. A weird loss to NC State where they lost by 26. I think that's what kind of hurts them. And I think some of it too might be factor in that non-conference schedule, which was not very good. I mean, their only really good non-conference win was Michigan on the road, which is actually pretty impressive because Michigan might actually make the tournament this year. But there was really nobody else really other than a couple, like a Big Ten game, again, another Big Ten game on a neutral over Nebraska. They have, they played Ole Miss at home and beat them. But aside from that, it's a lot of teams outside the top 250 on KenPom. So maybe some of that has to do with some of the rating, but I think they're better than that number indicates.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you hit it on the head that non-com schedule really dinged them this year. But their in-conference competition and head-to-heads have kept them in that top 50 conversation, and that's probably a good thing. I think they are a better team than 43. I agree with you. I think they probably ought to be up a little closer to where Wake Forest is at number 33. Now, and because we've had this ongoing conversation about Wake, 33. What do you think?
I guess I'm okay with it. I mean, they still don't have a lot of wins that really jump out to me just on their schedule. I mean, the Miami win is looking better and better when you factor that they beat them by 17 points. Mm-hmm. It's just they don't have anything else really on their schedule that of substance. Their second, the Pitt game that they won Wednesday is now their second best win of the season. They're ranked 72nd in KenPom. But I've talked about for a couple weeks now is just how mediocre the bubble is. That like on a normal year, Wake Forest may not even be considered for the tournament, but because they're gonna finish right around 500 in the ACC, and they'll have a shot to get in. Like I say, normal years they probably wouldn't, but you have to take 68 teams, no matter how you shape it. And with the way that the people look at the ACC, they're probably going to get that nod over some other teams that from maybe a little bit lesser conference that maybe on paper might deserve it more.
Now, a lot of people, especially people who don't like Duke, are going to look at this number 15 in KenPom, and they're going to go, these guys keep losing critical games. But I want to remind people about something. And first, I want to remind people of this. When it comes down to ACC teams, I don't have a favorite. It's just that simple. I like to see all of the teams doing well. I love the competition in the conference. I love the conference, period. Okay, but I don't have a dog in this hunt. So if I'm standing up for a team, it's because it's for good reasons. So I'm looking at this number 15 for Duke and thinking to myself, that's a good place for them to be. I think it's earned based upon their head-to-head, their wins, close losses, and it's against some stellar ACC competition and also some stellar non-con games, which have just been crazy games at times. Kentucky, I think, was that first one that we looked at. That was a close game. You know, so I think Duke belongs right where they are. Florida State at 18, yeah, I'm okay with that. Notre Dame has worked their way up to 25. I think they belong right there. Miami at 29, they've earned that. The Wake Forest is a conversation. Clemson at 34. I'm not really sure. You know, if the stats are saying that that's where they're supposed to be, okay. I'm big into stats. You know, it's part of what I do for a living anyway. So, and I don't really see any issues with Pomeroy's ratings. I've never had any, to tell you the truth. And again, Virginia Tech, the 43, and Syracuse, 50. You know, that must absolutely drive somebody who is into the stats. It must drive them crazy because Syracuse has been this yo-yo all season.
So I want to go back for just a second, Jim, to Clemson.
Yeah.
And you say they're 14-14 after they lost to Florida State, 4-12 in the conference. Yet they're ranked at the 34th spot. And you look at their losses. I mean, you obviously lost to Florida State by 2, Virginia Tech by 1, Miami by 6, Duke by 2, Syracuse by 1. Another 1-point loss to Virginia Tech, and they lost in overtime to North Carolina. But what also stands out too is the loss at Louisville by 32 and the Florida State loss when they lost to them by 48. I mean, they're one of those teams that most of the time they'll be competitive, but when they're undermatched or they're overmatched, I should say, they're really overmatched.
Yeah, they are. It's horrible to watch, to be quite frank.
And I hope, to be perfectly honest, that we're done talking about them as a bubble team.
I think we are. How about that? The next one you are absolutely going to love, Will. This is the projected bracketology. North Carolina is holding that number one seed again, as well they should be, I think. Louisville, a number two seed. Duke is a 3 seed. FSU, a 4 seed. Virginia, this is a little surprising because there's been some folks, and we'll look at Joe Lunardi later in the week. Some folks have said UVA ought to be a lower seed than this, but they're at number 5. Notre Dame is a 6. Miami nabs a 9. And the two teams, and here's your surprise, taking the 10, Wake Forest and also Virginia Tech. So, 9 teams projected to take seeds in the NCAA tournament from the ACC. Should we just jump ahead here, Will, and see what your feelings are again on Wake Forest being this
where they are? Well, I mean, when you look at it, like I understand the selection. I feel like a 10 maybe just a hair high. I think at this point they're going to make it. They could use the home win over Louisville on Wednesday to really solidify that spot. but I don't think they should be on the same seed line as a Virginia Tech, who I feel like could be probably a little bit higher, maybe an 8. I think they actually deserve to be higher than a 10 seed right now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as everybody else, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, I think UNC will, with another, win, or maybe beating Duke next weekend, will probably lock up a 1 seed no matter what happens in the ACC tournament. I mean, Louisville could drop to a 3. I think Duke will drop probably into a 4 with FSU. I think Virginia as a 5 is fair right now, just because they lost 4 in a row. They could very well, they're a team that, depending if they end up going to the NCAA tournament as a 5 seed, I would not be surprised, depending on the matchup, if a lot of people pick them as that 12-5 upset that we tend to see every year in the NCAA tournament. And I've seen some brackets having them play a team like Texas Arlington, who I've seen a couple times this year, and think they could absolutely upset Virginia. They're actually a really good lower major team. Notre Dame is a 6th. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's a fair seed for them. Miami, like say a 9 seed, and obviously they can move up to an 8 or a 7 with that, with the Duke win. Maybe Virginia Tech bumps up to a 9 with the new one, with the way with another win, yesterday. And I mean, Wake Forest, we'll see what they do in these last two games, if they can get another win to lock themselves in. But I for sure am not going to say they're in fully locked in just yet.
Mm-hmm. At number 10, I would say that Wake Forest still is sort of lurking. Virginia mm-hmm. Tech, I think, is in. Mm-hmm. I don't have an issue with them. They have been steady as she goes, and holding a seed in most bracketology for a good portion of the year so far. So if I were to look at things here, I know that at one point people were talking about UVA possibly being a 7 seed, and I'm not sure I buy that. I'm with you. I think most of these are fairly accurate. There is some room for some movement up and down, but not a whole lot. Not at this point. And I don't think that the tournament overall, unless there's just some absolutely ugly basketball.
Mm-hmm. There has been.
And
it's just,
and the ACC tournament is certainly a place where some ugly basketball occurs. And we're talking about ugly as in loss mm-hmm. by the unexpected. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that you can get a team like Syracuse that comes in and just wreaks havoc and takes the championship.
Uh-huh.
That's not far-fetched, folks.
No, it isn't.
Anybody
no, it isn't.
That's watched the tournament over the years knows any given day, baby, any given day. It'll be fun to watch. It's coming up here pretty soon, too. We're not too far away. We only have a little bit of basketball left before we hit the ACC men's tournament. So mm-hmm. looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. By the way, when we talk about the NCAA tournament, if you go to the web site at accnation.net, that's net, accnation.net, on the right-hand side, if you scroll down about halfway, you'll see a Final Four bracket, or not a bracket, but a logo. Click on that, and you can download your bracket for the NCAA tournament. So we've set you up with that so that you can have something to pin in. You may want to, if you're like me, you're probably going to download several of them. whichever one looks best is the one I'm going to submit for everybody to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't blame you.
I'm just giving you that heads up there. So that's a look at the projected bracketology.
Let's move on. Look at the ACC standings after games of the Saturday, the February 25th. North Carolina has all but wrapped up the regular season with a 13-3 conference record. Florida State is second at 11-5. Louisville is 10-5, along with Notre Dame. Duke 10-6, along with Miami. Three teams with 9-7 conference records: Syracuse, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. Everyone else is below 500 in conference play. Overall, you can add Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, Pitt, Clemson, and NC State in the mix of teams that are all at 500 or better. And Georgia Tech and Wake actually have identical 16-12 records.
Wow, that's fascinating to look at the standings, Will. I'm kind of surprised. I tell you where my surprise starts the most. Georgia Tech. That's where I'm probably the most surprised for me is Georgia Tech this season. And right after that, the fact that I'm looking at, as you mentioned, three teams with a 9-7 conference record, Syracuse, Virginia, and Virginia Tech. Who would have ever thought that? So those are my two big surprises, and probably after that, if I want to throw in a third, Notre Dame being where they are, I did not expect that at all.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, Georgia Tech has exceeded expectations this year, especially since some people said this was going to be the worst Power Five team ever, and Josh Pastner's coached them up to, you know, potentially a 500 conference record. We'll see how these last couple games play out. But, I mean, I don't think they're an ACC or NCAA tournament team, but the fact that they've, already won 7 conference games and will probably finish around 500, that's a big step forward for that program. Also, I just want to mention, too, Miami, 10-6 in the conference. That's a lot better than I expected out of them this year. I thought that with all the losses they suffered last year, they would take a pretty significant step down in a rebuilding year. But it's been an impressive coaching job by Jim Larrañaga this year.
Yes, indeed. And going back to Pastner, I can remember conversations when he was hired. There was a lot of scrutiny over that hire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And you figure that was just an opportunity for him because he wasn't going to last long at Memphis, and he basically just worked his way out of there. And it basically was one of those, let's just get you out of here before you actually get fired.
Yeah, and I think that's an accurate way of looking at that. A lot of folks looked at that scenario from that standpoint and then took it over to Georgia Tech and said, my gosh, what are you guys doing? You're taking something that's bad, a scenario that's bad, and just laying it in over top the Yellow Jackets. The last thing they absolutely needed in their basketball program. You know, this is where athletic directors often earn their keep. They have a conversation with an individual, a coach, and get a real feel for where they are, talk to the people that are around them, see if there's growth going on, if they're continuing to grow, to mature. I think this is the case with Pastner. I think he's one of these individuals who probably got in a little bit over his head, had not fully matured as a coach yet, as an individual, and we're always doing that. I mean, it's a constant. And somebody said, you know, this would be a smart move. Here's somebody with some energy, some knowledge, some experience. Let's give him the opportunity to take that. He's growing, and let him have another chance at all the he's learned from his mistakes. I'd say he has, based upon what we've seen and heard so far. And I hope he doesn't fall back on that. But I think he's learned from his mistakes in the past, taken that, grown, and now is going in the right direction with Georgia Tech. So, a hand for Josh Pastner and Georgia Tech for what could be labeled a brave move, hiring somebody in that scenario. Or maybe it was just a very smart move before the athletic director departed. So, that may be the plus of the former athletic director's tenure there, because a lot of the other things weren't. And Larrañaga definitely did a wonderful job this season, taking a team that it lost a lot of talent, and has really turned it into something positive for the Canes this season. So very good stuff. Well, after all of that, let's hit cruise for a moment, find out what's new on the home front, talk about maybe some samplings and other things that are happening. Will, let's find out what's going on with you, man.
Pretty low-key week this week for me. Just spent a lot of the week, hanging out at home with the little one, little Martin. It's been an interesting weather week for Minnesota. We had record high temperatures into the 60s on Monday and Tuesday, and then we had this thing coming where they had. Where like the big all the weather people were saying that we would get a foot of snow on Thursday and the Friday. They were like, it was winter storm warnings were out for the Twin Cities for like I said a foot of snow, and we ended up maybe getting a few snowflakes out of it. The trajectory ended up shifting about basically outside of the Twin Cities south down towards the Iowa border, and then southeast Minnesota got up to a foot of snow. It missed the Twin Cities probably by 20 miles. And like I say, we got not even a dusting. We got a handful of snowflakes. It was kind of a disappointment. I wanted to see a little more snow. I wanted to see how little Martin would handle being outside in the snow, but he didn't get that opportunity. But I'm not necessarily all that upset about it.
No, it tends to be disruptive, even for folks who are common, or it's common for a lot of snow. And you guys didn't really get a lot of snow this season, did you?
Not really. I mean, we had a couple of 6-inch snowfalls this year, but that was back in November, December. Nothing really in 2017. That's been huge. I mean, this was supposed to be the big one, but it never happened. But it's also known that March is actually one of the snowiest months of the year for Minnesota, so we're certainly not out of the woods just yet.
Okay, so it's still to come. Any visits to Bald Man?
Yes, went there on Saturday. Went there with my wife, and I enjoyed a couple of we enjoyed a couple of Black Velvet Milk Stouts. Obviously, a very good beer, and we didn't partake in the food truck this week just because I'm not a fan of Euros, but that was the food truck this week, was the Euro truck. But they had a very they always bring some really good food trucks in on the weekends, and there's really no competition around them, so they do very good business. And I mentioned last week that they were in the process of canning a couple of their beers, their Misty Mountain Hops IPA, and then their Young American Pale Ale, which are two really solid beers. And I like to drink the Young American when it's a little warmer out. And I can't wait to get those in cans in my possession so I can take them out. And hopefully if I make another trip to Virginia this year, I'll be carrying some, and hopefully you'll get to sample it.
Yeah, bring them on down. I've got a lot of sample stuff ready for you. I'm running out of space, Will. It's good stuff that you guys can take home with you. And especially if you drive, it may be safer to take it that way. So this week, I hate to say it, but I actually wasted a good beer.
Oh.
It's really hard for me to say this, but then the other side of it, I was doing brats, and I'm not going to do a brat if you don't do bratwurst in just anything. It's got to be in a good beer. So, it wasn't wasted. Trust me. It was Brad's word. Oh,
that makes a lot more sense.
Whew, they were so good, man. We went through a pack like it wasn't even. It was gone. And I will brag on my basketball team. We went to the championship. We won. We pulled it out. And the opponent has dogged us all season. They almost got us a week ago in the championship game. They were ahead for probably 75% to 80% of the game. And in the last 2 minutes, we pulled it out and won by 5. So,
nice.
Champs. So that was fun, and it was fun to watch the kids. They just absolutely lost it at the end of the game. It was a nail-biter. So good basketball. I enjoyed doing that. So let's go across the nation here. Congratulations to the UVA men's tennis team for winning the ITA Indoor Championship. Speaking of championships, Virginia Tech, the men, and Miami, the women, claimed the titles in the ACC Indoor Track and Field Championships. Notre Dame men won the ACC fencing title. The women are performing as we record, so we'll let you know about that at accnation.net. Coming up, the ACC Men's Swimming Championships, also the Wrestling Championships. And speaking of the NCAA, they allocated 31 spots for wrestlers from the ACC to be in the tournament. And I had a great opportunity. This is something that I had not thought about bringing up, but I will. Talk to a former UVA women's lacrosse All-American who is now a coach at George Mason University, Jesse Morgan. And we have a story and a very short podcast interview with her up on the site at accnation.net. A very enjoyable person to talk to. So let's move on.
Yes, let's move on and talk some women's basketball. Last Sunday, Wake beat NC State 89-77. Virginia had a 63-55 win over Virginia Tech, and also a solid win by Notre Dame beating Syracuse 85-80. Thursday, Miami beat Virginia Tech 79-69. No real surprises on the schedule. Pretty chalky week. Mm-hmm. But let's take a look at the bracketology for the women's tournament. Notre Dame is currently projected as a one seed. Florida State and Duke are both projected at three seeds. Louisville and Miami are fours. Syracuse, a six seed. NC State, a seven. And surprise, 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 Virginia is currently in as a 10 seed.
Wow, that is a surprise. That is a very big surprise considering where they started out in the week. Or not in the week, but in the schedule. Mm-hmm. So, wow. The Notre Dame doesn't throw me at all. I think they have earned that. They are a good team, and they may not be ranked in, you know, back-to-back with UConn like they were earlier in the season, but they are still very much worthy of that number one seed. FSU, Duke, threes, why not? Why not Duke, Will?
I knew you were going to say that.
You knew it was coming. Louisville and Miami, fours. I can see that Syracuse, six. Yeah, that's where I may be a little, I may have to question that one a little bit. NC State, a seven. Well, with their performance over the last couple of weeks, I would say maybe that was probably not too surprising. But Virginia, wow, 10. Man, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of great wins on their schedule. I mean, they did beat upset Florida State, you know, a week and a half ago. That was far and away their best win on the season. They don't really have a whole lot else of substance really on their in terms of their resume. They've beaten pretty much everyone they're supposed to beat. They have one game left. Being played Sunday, they host NC State, so a win there would definitely put them a little farther in. They're probably got to be one of the last teams in. I don't know if this will hold. They probably need to upset NC State plus get at least one win in the ACC tournament to be in. But the fact that they're in this year right now, it shows a lot of just how much. Actually did a pretty good coaching job. Coach Joanna Boyle's done. They've had they had this one freshman, Toussaint's her last name. I watched her play last week against Virginia Tech, and she looks like a future star. She's just really good.
She is just in a whole different league of her own, man. She's unconscious when she's on the floor. I love watching her.
She's only she's a freshman, and she already looks like she's going to be a player of the year candidate here in another year or two.
Now, here's the thing. I want to back up just a minute and talk about Joanna Boyle. You know, a year or 2 years ago, boy, everybody was talking about it's time for a replacement. It's time for a new coach. How about bringing Dawn Staley in? Wow.
You know what? I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people who who want that to happen. But a season like this, with the turnaround that they've had, I don't think that's going to happen. And it let's just be real here. It's hard to be the one to follow a coaching legend like Debbie Ryan.
True.
But true. She's, you know, a season like this, she's proven she's got a little. She can actually coach. I mean, obviously, like I said, with Dominic Toussaint on your roster, you're going to look pretty good. But yeah, like I say, I mean, if they could sneak into the NCAA tournament, that'll be a very successful season for this program.
Here's another thing, and in. You know, Joanna Boyle, she has coached for a while, so it's not like, you know, she needs a whole lot of seasoning. But the reality is that no matter where you coach, you have to make adjustments. You have to start finding your way through the system and kind of restructure who and what and how your program works. And I think that's what she's been doing, just sort of bringing it all in. Narrowing the focus, and I think she may be there. So, you know, the maturing process for a coach, it's like anybody. It's ongoing. And this may be it. You know, she unfortunately had a couple of players who were not real happy with her and wanted to move on and do other things. And this happens. It happens. You know, you don't like a coach and you just move on. It's not what you anticipated. You're right. This young lady, the freshman, she is some sort of terror, and I just love watching that kind of player. I saw her go down through the paint like there was like a hot knife through butter. It was like nobody touched.
She's
her.
Very quick.
Oh, crazy stuff! Crazy mm-hmm. stuff. Anybody on that list that overall? I mean, I had a question with Syracuse and NC State being 6-7, but anybody that hits you maybe not.
I think you and I are kind of in agreement there that Syracuse and NC State are the only ones I question. I think all the other ones are pretty fair. I think Notre Dame, especially if they can win on Sunday and win the outright regular season title, I think that will lock them in as a one seed for sure. The other ones are pretty fair. Duke is a 3, that's fair. Louisville, Miami are 4, you know, 4s, that's fair. I'd probably swap NC State and Syracuse personally. I think NC State, I mean, I think they should probably be a 6 and Syracuse a 7, but mm-hmm. you know, I'm not going to quarrel about it weight, you know, that much. I think they're close to where they want to be. I might flip-flop the 2.
Yeah. The season is for all intents and purposes pretty much over. And the tournament is right around the corner. It's very close, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. So we're going to – any surprises that you see coming up in the tournament? I mean, do you think that – you know, we had that Florida State and Notre Dame game earlier in the season. Are there any surprises that you see among the women's basketball?
You know, I think obviously in terms of successful season, I think we just mentioned Virginia, but I think Syracuse has played a lot better this year than I expected. We thought they'd have a little bit of a down year with all the losses they suffered last season, you know, after last season. But I mean, if Chris was here, he would go on and on about the style of Quentin Hillsman and his wardrobe. But you know, he's done a pretty good coaching job this year. He's got them, you know, back in the tournament. I don't know how far they'll go. I don't think they're going to make it to the championship game again this year. But tell you what, this is a team I'm looking to next year as a possible ACC contender. Because they get a lot of this team back, plus they get a transfer in who led the nation in scoring last season. That team, that could be a team to watch going in the 2017-18 season.
Mm-hmm. Chris is our GQ guy. He goes to work every day in a tie and suit and the whole nine yards. And meanwhile, I don't know what Will is wearing at the moment, but I'm wearing a pair of jeans and a fireman's t-shirt. So there you go. That's how I usually go through my week. If I have to venture out, khakis and maybe a dress shirt, and that's about it.
So. I'm just in sweatpants and a t-shirt. I'm in no.
There you go.
I'm chilling.
Yeah, exactly. I always envision Chris sitting there with a tie on while he's doing the shows. Just kidding. Any final thoughts on all the action this week in the ACC, Will?
I just wanted to just add in a couple things real quick. Baseball-wise, down the four undefeated teams left. Georgia Tech's undefeated, so is Louisville. North Carolina and the Cardiac Cavs of Virginia are undefeated again. They played twice this week. They've come back from at least four runs down to win their games. And they've some very timely hitting by the Cavs. Adam Haseley's doing really well. He's up there in terms of batting average and hits in the ACC. He's doing really well. You know, UNC is, they have J.B. Bukauskas, who I've raved about. He's one of the top pitchers in the country, and he's up amongst the leaders in strikeouts in the country. You say Louisville, Brendan McKay is actually hitting the ball really well. He's not really doing the pitching, but he leads the ACC in hitting right now, which is a pretty impressive stat.
Wow.
On the softball side, Florida State, once again, they're getting it done, 13-1. They're getting it done with their pitching, and Jessica Burrows and Megan King are no worse than like third in wins and strikeouts and ERA. They're two pretty nasty pitchers, and they're going to carry Florida State a long way.
Yes, I've always been impressed by the two women. They are some great on the mound, and it's just amazing mm-hmm. stuff. Coming up this week at accnation.net, of course, baseball, as we talked about, we'll have the most recent coaches poll. Basketball, the poll comes out on Monday. We'll also be taking a look at Joe Lunardi's bracketology and Ken Pom a little closer, the Pomeroy ratings. Beach volleyball, we know where FSU stands in that, and we won't have an update on that until they really start getting to underway. We'll talk a little bit about fencing, the ACC championship. We'll let you know about the men and the women. Also, golf, a lot of individual and team ranking action there, gymnastics, ice hockey, lacrosse, rowing. The preseason poll doesn't come out until early March, so we got a little ways to go there. Softball, we got the NFCA softball poll that's coming up. We'll look at swimming. The ACC men's swimming championships are underway this week, as we mentioned earlier. The tennis ITA rankings, the ACC men's and women's indoor track and field championships. We've got stories on that. Plus, more information on wrestling, including, I think we've got a poll out this week. I'm not 100% sure of that, but if not, we'll be looking at the ACC championships, which are coming up. Those are just some of the stories and things we're going to be talking about on accnation.net, both on the website and on the podcast. And that wraps another week from around the nation. Visit us at accnation.net for the full story. Until next time, for Will Ogin and I'm Jim Quist. Have a great week.
Let's go.